We're back, and I have to tell you, we're here to talk, and this now we're going to talk about one of my most favorite things, and you get to talk about it.
Cool.
And we're going to do this twice, guys. We're going to do kind of a short section of this to get you started, then we're going to get into scripting, teach you about variables and stuff, and then hit remoting this topic again with something called sessions that'll be outstanding. But remoting, this changed how I manage in scale when it comes to the entire Windows, all the products, the platform, everything. This, when it released with version 2, literally made me a hero overnight. So you have to tell us about what were you trying to solve with this?
Sure.
What does this thing do? This is unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, so in PowerShell, we have this idea. We called it, we talked a lot about it in the past. We don't talk so much about it now, because we already delivered it. This notion of universal code execution, right? Which is to say that you have code, and sometimes you want to run the code here. Yeah, that's what we do. Everything we've been showing you today, we bring up a console window, and we type the code, and the code runs here. But actually, it's a generalization. Like, here is a generalization or a specialization of anywhere. Like, sometimes I want to run the code there, and sometimes I want to run the code there, and sometimes I want to run the code on those machines.
Yeah.
And sometimes I want to run the code on those machines as myself, and sometimes I want to give a different set of credentials. And sometimes I want to run it and get the results back immediately, and sometimes I want to run it and I'll get the results back later. And sometimes I want to run it in a way that I can do anything. And sometimes I want to run it in an environment where, no, these are and only these commands you can run. In
right.
secure environments. And so there's this notion of this universal code execution model. Oh, and by the way, the last one was, sometimes I want to run it. I'm going to run it for such a long time that I might want to, like, shut down the machine and bring it back up and have it continue to run.
Right. Go somewhere else and maybe check on it or something.
Exactly. So this is the notion of the universal code execution model. And remoting, of course, is intrinsic to that. Coupled with that are notions like jobs. Jobs are things that run in the background. And then workflow, which we added in PowerShell version 3, which is the idea that says, hey, I'm going to run this, and at any stage after any command, I can suspend things, shut down the machine, bring it back up, and continue from where I started.
Now, see, this sounds awesome. Now, what we had before is like with like the remote server administration tools, I have a graphical, like Active yeah. Directory users and computers. It will connect to a domain controller over DCOM using RPC,
yes.
right? And there's a lot of challenges and problems with that. Firewall challenges, right?
Yes.
And all kinds of a mess.
Yeah.
But what you guys created, though, solves all those problems.
Exactly. So here's what we did. First was we wanted to solve all those problems. So HTTP, super important. Next was we already had a protocol that went over HTTP, our standards-based management. So you probably heard we talk a lot these days about standards-based management. In fact, you know, at tech eds and such, I'll show up. I'll bring up a Linux box, and I'll show how on a Linux box I can enumerate all the roles on a remote Windows server and then install roles on a remote Windows server from a Linux box. I mean, just crazy stuff, right?
How do you... I saw you do that demonstration for the first time, I think it was like a year and a half ago, and I just went,
Just explodes.
I know.
So this is because of this standards and WinRM, the WinRM or WS Management Protocol. WinRM is our implementation of that. And so for PowerShell remoting, we leverage WinRM, and we added streaming extensions to it. So that's how it works.
And WinRM is the service that you're going to see that's running underneath all that. As a matter of fact, I got a couple of slides here, and then we'll talk some more about this. If you take a look at the slide here, is an overview of remoting. Basically,
Ooh.
What this comes down to is you can go and touch, just as Jeffrey went through the scenarios, using what you've already been typing in at the console locally, you can pick that up and now fire that at whatever it is you want to fire it at. And it's over remoting, which is going to give us a lot of cool characteristics. It's going to be fast. It's going to be easy to cross firewalls because we only have one port to deal with, and we're dealing with a secured port. So here's the idea. If your machines are in a domain, this isn't going over just HTTP plain text. It's getting all encrypted with Kerberos.
Yep.
And then, of course, if you're going across the internet or across firewalls and you want to put on SSL, or if you even want to do SSL internally, you can put on SSL if you want that full encrypted tunnel. So,
well, just to be clear, we'll encrypt it twice.
We'll encrypt it twice at that point. Yeah. If you really need it twicely encrypted, we'll do it twice. But here's the idea, is that you're hitting whatever machines you want securely and with what credentials you want, and nobody can tell, I mean, nobody can read it. Nobody can use a protocol sniffer and sniff out what's going on. So this is actually really cool stuff. So, you know, there's enabling remoting is definitely one of these things that, that comes up. First of all, we just need to tell everybody that you have to turn remoting on, kind of, sort of, maybe, because in prior versions, not Server 2012, but in prior versions, remoting had to be turned on. And this can actually be kind of a hard conversation for some security people to have, or some admins to have with their security people, in that I'm going to turn on this really cool thing that lets me do whatever I want to whatever I want. And the security guy goes, no.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what they should say. But as soon as they understand remoting and how it works, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, this is perfectly fine.
Yes.
So there's this conversation that has to have to get it turned on. And if you guys take a look at the slide here, what I've done is I've shown you a basic way to turn it on. I'm actually going to demonstrate this on one of my machines here. But there's a commandlet that you can use called enable-ps-remoting. And now, you want to walk around to all of your servers and type enable PS remoting, knock yourself out. But there's a group policy, and I have it written down here for you. It's much easier if you use the group policy to enable remoting. But here's the deal. You have to turn this on. Let me say it again. You have to turn this on. We're going to show you all these great features. But none of it's going to work until you turn on remoting. It's not necessarily an easy conversation. There's a free ebook on PowerShell.org, Secrets About Remoting.
Yeah, great book.
Which will not only take you through every possible scenario, but is the information that your security guys need to know so that they understand that it's secured and what ports it uses. This has to be turned on. It's not because I'm just saying it. It's because you're running out of options now. A lot of the new administrative graphical tools are made to use PowerShell and PowerShell remoting. Server 2012 is a great example with the new server manager, right? It's using all of these capabilities that are built in, and if you don't have it turned on, you can't manage anything with anything. So you've got to get it turned on. And as a side note, Server 2012, it's turned on by default.
Oh yeah.
So it's gonna get turned on.
Just to be clear on that one, so as you know, we are secure by default, and release mm-hmm. by release, we continue to shut things off by default, and you have to turn them on. In the course, this has been going on for quite a number of years, been exactly, to my knowledge, one time where we went the other direction, where we turned something on by default instead of off by default, and that was?
It's got to be PowerShell remoting.
PowerShell remoting. That's right. So for Windows Server 2012, we turned on PowerShell remoting. It was a big issue. The security guys are like, what are you talking about? Maybe you didn't get the memo. We're going the other direction. And it's like, okay, well, let's talk about that. Why is that? And the answer is, of course, Windows Server 2012, right? It is a cloud operating system. A cloud operating system says, hey, it's not about this server, it's about these servers. I need to be able to manage things. And therefore, remoting of large numbers of systems is critical function. It is the core of a cloud OS. And so they said, okay, well, I'm willing to entertain that. I mean, that makes sense. But we got to be sure and say, okay, well, let's walk through it. And we showed them all the things that we had done. Actually, they've been involved all along. And step by step by step, we went and did the threat analysis. And they were convinced, yeah, this is safe to do. And so when you have that conversation with your security guys, you just point to that. And the history of this server, one time we switch and turn things on by default, it is PowerShell remoting. So go for it.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great concept because Microsoft's not going to turn on something that is an easy-to-use attack surface. It's just not going to happen.
Now, we put an extraordinary amount into the security of making sure that this is going to be a secure environment. We've got pen testers who've been evaluating the design, the code, et cetera. We spent a lot. Look, we started PowerShell after Bill Gates' famous security memo,
yeah.
Right? So, and what started that security memo? What started that whole boofarama? I love you.
I love you, man.
.vbs.
Talking about that. I was just saying I love you, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's special. Okay.
Okay,
not that there's anything wrong with that. No, it was scripting. Scripting right. had caused that big I love you mess. And so we knew that scripting was going to be a key vector. So we just spent a ton of time making sure we were secure, secure, secure.
So now that we've jumped up and down enough that you not only have to turn this on, but it's secured to have it turned on, get it turned on, let's start to show you some of the cool things that you can do. Now, like I said, we're going to hit this topic twice as we learn more and more about it. So this is all in the slides, but let me take you through here. And as soon as I can, there we go. Well, maybe not quite.
I can do something.
I think you have control of my machine.
No. I give it up.
Okay, my machine is just moving slow for a second. Here we go. Okay. So let me do something real quick, and Jeffrey, please jump in. First of all, we're going to do what's called a one-to-one connection. This is, and you'll see exactly, watch, I'm going to type in enter, it's a commandlet, PS session, PowerShell session, and I'm going to put in a computer name that I want to go to. I'm just going to say DC. It's one of the VMs that I have running. Watch what happens to my prompt here. You see what happened? Guess where I'm sitting right now. Guess where I am right now. I'm on the DC. I'm on the DC. You don't believe me? Watch. I'm going to clean up this path a little bit. Watch. Host name. And I'll do IP config. That information is coming from the DC. So I can actually do a one-to-one connection, and I can troubleshoot, and I can manage a single system this way as if I was sitting on there. As a matter of fact, let me think
of this as a secure telnet.
A secure telnet. I love that. And here's, let me show you why I think that this is also so important, that you just get used to managing servers. When you just need to do one thing to one server, this is a great way to do it. Mm. Get used to this, because have you guys seen server 2012? Let me exit out of this, and let me just show you. I'm going to go out to my domain controller. I'm going to show you server 2012. This is, to me, fascinating. Mm. Welcome aboard.
Oh,
By the way, what you guys did with the color scheme on here is awesome. The background, the color scheme, this is totally awesome.
It's Zen-like in its simplicity.
It's very Zen-like in its simplicity. Yeah, you guys probably figured out that this is... You know, we used to refer to this as the core installation, and yeah, it was Server 2012. This is now the default installation. So,
yes.
And for a good reason. Performance, security, all that kind of stuff. So, let me show you. You would be managing the server that way anyways, and I don't want to screw this up, so let me get rid of him. There we go. So doing that single session, that enter PS session to a machine that you want to do work on, it gives you that one-to-one connection, and you can now do whatever you want on that machine. But here's the big one, and so let me exit this. You guys have been watching all day long, and you know you're going to be doing a lot of good hard work on stuff like this. I want to do get event log, log name, system, and I'm just going to do newest 3. Now, I could do entry type and all this other stuff, but I just want to keep it short and simple, because let me just show you. I'm going to take this and I'm going to copy this. What I can get to work here, and what Jeffrey was saying is the whole point is, will work anywhere. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to invoke command. This is a remoting command. What computers? When you use this dash computer name, it's using PowerShell remoting, not the old DCOM RPC stuff, which is what a lot of the older commandlets use. So this one's using the good stuff. And then, whatever you put in the squigglies is exactly what we're going to do. Oops, sorry, wait a minute. No. Put in some computer names, and I'm going to be brave and risky. Whatever you put in the squigglies is exactly what we're going to do. And in this case, watch. Boom. So over remoting, was that approval back there that we heard a knock or something? That I want you to get that what just happened is by using PowerShell remoting, I just hit 3 different systems all at the same time and said, give me this information. I can now convert this, I can put it to a file, I can put it to a web page, whatever it is I want to do with it, but I just used PowerShell remoting. And Jeffrey, this is actually so powerful that admins need to be a little careful, right? Because things like I don't know.
Restart computer.
Yeah, that's a good one. Restart computer. all of a sudden take on a whole new dimension, because whatever you fill that with, that's what it's going to do. Dash computer name, I can be grabbing the computers from Active Directory, a CSV file, a text file.
You're making me nervous, man.
I know, at the moment, I'm actually very nervous too. I need to get rid of that so it doesn't actually...
Just take minus what if.
And so it's going to restart those machines. So this is a one-to-many connection. Now, Jeffrey, one of the things that comes up all the time is if I do get service, I'll do name bits. How's this working? I mean, it's actually sending the commands to the machine, and then how am I getting this data back?
Yeah, so literally what happens is we go and we create a connection to that remote machine, right? So there's a TCP connection. We then fire up a PowerShell connection. We load .NET. We load PowerShell. We take that code, and we squirt it across the wire. We then execute it. You know, we logged you in. Use your credentials to log you in. We then execute the code there, and then we get those objects, and we serialize those objects. We move them across the wire, and then we reconstitute them. We deserialize them and emit them as though they happened here.
Okay, so let me see if I get this straight, because you're going to have to explain the serialization
stuff.
But let me see if I can get this straight. So we're connecting to these remote machines, and we're actually starting a PowerShell session on those machines. Mm-hmm. And having the command run on those machines. So it's not my computer working harder, it's those machines that are doing the work.
Yep.
Now, the serialization, you're squirting this stuff back, serialize, deserialize, blah, 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 blah. What does this mean?
Exactly. So what we do is we take the object and we transform it into something that can be moved around and reconstructed anywhere.
Okay,
so concretely, I mean anywhere, like, I'm over here, I go talk to your machine and it's Windows talking .NET, and then I could bring it over here and it could be Linux. Now there's no .NET on Linux, so how's that gonna work?
Right.
And so I've gotta serialize it into something that can work anywhere. Now imagine I go and I say, well, hey, I talk to Exchange version whatever, and I get the objects here, but I don't have Exchange here. So how do I recreate Exchange objects?
Right.
Again, that's the problem. So what we do is we take these objects and we turn them into essentially a property bag. No, it's just a bag of properties. And then we take them and, you know, the properties have names and values, and the values have types. Now here's the trick. The types are not the infinite set of types there, right? If you tried to do that, it would never work. So what we do is we render it down to a set of, I think, 26 or so types, which, you know, I put my badge on the table and I say, if this, I guarantee that these will always work. If these don't work, fire me.
Well, there you go. Okay.
Forever. Because you know what? An Exchange mailbox, 30 years from now, probably going to change. But I'll guarantee you this, a 64-bit integer isn't going to change 30 years from now.
Yeah.
Right? So it's those type of things. Integers, strings, ints, GUIDs, things like that.
GUIDs, secure things strings. That are going to be the same.
Exactly. So then I take that property bag and I just turn it into XML. I then bring it over here and then I reconstruct the property bag. And so, in fact, here let me correct something. Show your screen.
Okay,
so you said that this was remoting. In fact, invoke command is not remoting.
Oh, what is it?
Remote command is the way we do everything. Remember, we have this kind of underlying system.
And then we've got syntactic
sugar on top of it. So go remove the minus computer name.
So let's do this.
Yeah, well, that whole DC123, DC, get rid of that. Okay, and hit caret turn, okay. Okay, so that worked locally, and that's the same as if you hadn't typed invoke command in squiggle brackets. Or rather say, when you just type get service minus name bits, we transform it into this, and then we run it.
And then we run it.
This is the universal code execution.
And this is what makes it so easy for, especially if you're an administrator, you work out what you want first, then you can just put it in the squigglies, and it's going to work at the other side.
Exactly. So from here, pipe that to get member. Okay, and scroll up. And what do we have? We've got a
service control.
No, look at the beginning. System.
System.
That service process. That service controller. Now add a computer name to that line.
Oh, yeah. So let's do this. Let's have it go to, let's do dash comp and
DC S1. Okay, S1. Yeah, whatever. Now go up. Look, at the beginning.
Deserialized.
Ding, 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 ding. Now, a deserialized object is incredibly powerful, but it's different. Okay, so if you scroll up a bit.
Oh, I'm scrolled up
all
the way.
Did you do a clear? You did a clear.
I did a clear.
Okay, well, don't do a clear and do it again. Do the local command. Okay, notice, see these methods.
Right.
Okay, see the start and the stop method.
The stop, yeah.
Okay, that's because it's a live object and you can do methods on it. Go up to the deserialized one.
Yeah, it's there's...
There's just one method, two
there's
string.
One method, two string.
Exactly, because the object itself is gone, and what you have is a representation of the object. Now, it turns out that that's extraordinarily powerful. Now, some people say, oh, well, it should be the same everywhere. No, my friends, it shouldn't be. The point is that because we have this live, deserialized concept, what it means is that when I'm over there, I'm able to take advantage of my remote. I'm able to take advantage of the full richness of the object system, be able to do everything in a very lightweight way, a very high performance, low latency way. And then when I bring it over here, I can still do a ton of stuff, but I can't do that. So the way we refer to this is islands of optimization in a sea of interoperability.
Okay, let's islands of optimization in a sea
of interoperability.
Of interoperability.
Which is to say, it's poetic.
It's poetic.
So what that means is I can go to any of the machines and I can interoperate. I'm guaranteed to do that. And then there are times, however, when I'm doing all the code on one machine that I can optimize. I have the live objects, I can do things, etc. And that, by the way, is what allows us to do the GUI, layering GUIs on top of PowerShell. Because we can have these nice, high-speed, low-latency activities. If you tried to layer everything on top of a deserialized object, you got a lot of recreating objects, a lot of inefficiency.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, guys, this is our first hit into remoting. So we did one-to-one, we did one-to-many. Now, we've got more remoting to do because we're just getting started with the remoting, but now it's getting for that time for us to, before we get into scripting, I just...
Oh, no, we got to show them we're here.
No, I know. There's a problem I have.
Yeah.
This is cool, but you know one of the problems I have?
I know a few of the problems. Well,
one of the things I run into is, wouldn't it be cool if... You know, when I go on vacation, I don't know about you, but I like to go places with beaches.
Oh yeah,
They have the little drinks with the little umbrellas in them, and when I'm sitting on the beach, the last thing that I'm going to have is a laptop.
Yeah, right. Not so much. I mean, not cool at all.
But things still do go wrong back at the office, and so I am going to have a phone.
Yep. Ah, I see where you're going.
It'd be so cool if I could maybe have PowerShell here and I could launch a script, which we're going to be doing this afternoon, or I could type in these commands and I could do all of this kind of cool stuff. It would be so cool if I had PowerShell here or on a tablet.
If only you had PowerShell version 3.
If only you had PowerShell version 3 and at least one Server 2012 box.
Yeah.
It could be a VM, but I want to show you something kind of cool.
Have you picked up on the fact that we're big fans of PowerShell version 3?
Yeah, we're huge fans of PowerShell V3. So, guys, I want you to watch something. I'm actually going to take you through, this is kind of a cute review, not a cute review, I can't believe I said the word cute. This is a review over what we started off with today, discovering and utilizing commandlets, and in this case, using a feature that I think is just wickedly awesome. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to use PowerShell remote, or I'm going to enter a PS session to a server I have out there called PWA. Now this server doesn't really have anything on it. It's just a generic server 2012 box. Key is 2012. It could be a VM somewhere, but it's got to be 2012. What I'm going to do is, there's a commandlet out there called get Windows feature. Get Windows feature is part of the Server Manager module. What it does is it lists for you all of your roles and features for your server. And if there are X's in it, yeah, I know, ooh, I love it when it, if there's an X, that means it's installed. If there's not an X, it's not installed. Well, I'm going to use this commandlet to see if there's a feature, what features are available for PowerShell. And in Server 2012, we have something down here at the bottom called PowerShell Web Access. I'm about to change
the world as we know it.
And it's not me who the only thing that I'm changing is I'm showing you how to set it up. You're the one that changed the world. So.
Well, the team.
So, yeah, the team. So it's called Windows PowerShell Web Access. And this is pretty cool. So I want to install this. So we have this install Windows feature commandlet that'll let me install Windows PowerShell Web Access. I've used Git help. The install Windows feature will let me choose whatever thing I want to install, and away it goes. Now here's what it's going to do.
Ooh.
It's going to install IIS, because this is going to be a web thing. So it's going to install IIS. We had to have .NET 4.5 on here, and it's Server 2012. When it gets this installed, we'll also get a new module with some additional commandlets, 6 additional commandlets. So what we're going to do is use Git help to find them and then use them, because in like 3 steps, I'm going to have one of the coolest features in the world turned on. So watch, I'm going to clear my screen. This is just letting me know they have my updates turned off, which it's a VM right now, it does. But it exited with success, no restart needed, awesome.
Ooh.
So clear my screen, and guys, notice I'm doing this all on a different server, right? So
how cool is that?
Yeah, I know, this is totally wickedly cool. So I'm going to do Git help.
This is not your dad's server.
This is not your daddy's server. I love that. So it's called PowerShell Web Access, so PSWA. A lot of us just refer to it as PWA, PowerShell Web Access, but PSWA, and you can see that there are 6 commandlets. By looking at the verbs, you could probably figure out the first place I'm going to go is to install a PowerShell Web Access application. Technically, what's going to happen is we're going to create a web application by default off of the default website when we installed IIS. Now, we didn't need to install it. That happened for us automatically. You can alter these defaults, but I'm just going to take the defaults for right now. Now, so install PSWA, and you've got to use HTTPS for this, because this is going to be something that you hit from anywhere in the world back to your home. So we're going to need HTTPS. You can't do this with HTTP. Now, and if you don't have a good certificate to put on your web box right now for testing purposes, they have this option of use a test certificate. Now, my screen freaked out a little bit, but use a test certificate. It's going to put on a temporary cert. Just remember, this is not the cert that you want when you go to production. So what's going to happen is that it creates in IIS terms an application pool for the web app, creates the web app, points the web app to where the files are, and we're almost ready to go. We just now have to tell it who's allowed to use this. Now, this is going to be one of those rare do as I say, not as I do. And let me tell you why. Because I'm going to do Git help again on PSWA. We need to create who's allowed to use this and what they're allowed to go to when they use this. So we need to add rules. And you're going to want to add granular rules that make sense. In other words, is there a group of administrators that you want to be able to have to have PowerShell Web Access? And what machine should they be allowed to get to or remote to when they use this? You're going to want to keep control on this. You're not going to want to do what I'm going to do just for easy sake. So let me show you how to, what you're looking for here. So add a PSWA authorization rule. And let me just show you. What computers do you want to be able to remote to? So you can make this list. You can create it as a computer group. You also have another parameter you're going to need is either by user group or username, who's allowed to use this. So you're going to want to fill out the username, what computer, and we're not going to get a chance to do different kinds of configurations, but you can control through different configurations what commandlets a person's allowed to use when they get there, which is actually totally cool. These three things you need to specify.
Just to be clear, that's for things like, hey, I'm going to let these people come into these machines, yeah, and all they can do is read-only operations. Like they can do gets, but they can't do sets. And then this guy on these machines, he can reboot the machine, okay? But he can't read data, things like that.
And that's a really important point, is that these users, I've got administrators that have full capabilities, but I got a guy who's allowed to reset passwords when he gets there. That kind of stuff that you can control. Don't do what I'm about to do in real life. If you're just testing on a VM, that's fine. But what I'm going to do is I'm for those three parameters, I'm going to do star, star, star. Yeah, I know. That means everybody can do anything to everybody, and it's just lullapalooza. It's just, yeah, not cool. But for demonstration purposes.
Summer of love.
The summer of love at this point. I installed the feature. I installed the web app, and I have now created a rule.
Anarchy.
This is so freaky cool, guys. Yeah. This is. Let me exit out of that machine. This is so freaky cool that I'm going to. This is start process. I'm going to use the alias start, and I'm going to start iExplorer with HTTPS. And I'm going to go to that PowerShell web access box, the box I just set up, PWA, and it's going to go to the default website, and there's a web application underneath the default called PSWA. You can, of course, alter all this to make it cleaner, but watch what happens. Secured site. As a matter of fact, let me make this just a little bit zoomier.
Zoomier.
So this is the temporary certificate. Remember, in real life, when you go to production, you're going to replace this. Continue to website. It's going to come up. It's going to ask me, oh, looky. It's going to ask for some credentials. So let's do this.
Oh, doesn't it look like Outlook Web Access?
Yeah, we need to talk about that. So here, I'm going to put in my credentials. Watch. And what computer do I want to remote to and work with? Well, let's go mess with the domain controller. I feel kind of froggy today. Get it?
Oh, do host name. Show them where we are.
Oh, this is so cool. It's PowerShell through a browser. It's PowerShell through. You made PowerShell work through. But guys, gals.
On the beach.
On the beach through any browser. It's funny that it can be Safari, it can be IE, it can be Chrome, it can be on any device, a Microsoft device, a non-Microsoft device, your phone, your tablet, your laptop, anywhere in the world, you got PowerShell. And I want you to point out that not all these things have tab buttons when you use them. Hmm. But look, I'll just even type a get dash serve. Looky, graphically, they gave you a tab completion button. I mean, come on. They thought this through. This is so totally awesome. Now, a lot of you right now are going, wait a minute. What about security? Stop it. It's just like getting your email. It's the same thing as getting your email. If you have Exchange, you've got a CAS role out there, probably in your middle tier or protected by Threat Management Gateway, whatever you have it. It's the same thing. You can put the box right next to it. It's the same thing. So everybody says, well, this is going to be dangerous. No more dangerous than you checking your email. It's over HTTPS. You control who has access to this. You can even control what commandlets they can run. This is one of the best tools. And here's for a guy like me that's traveling all over the place, I don't have a laptop necessarily with VPN to my network all the time. Sometimes the only thing I have is the tablet in my hand. And I can run scripts, which we need to do scripts, and I can have access to PowerShell and remote to any box that I want to remote to.
Dude, you've undersold it.
I sold it.
Undersold it.
So I undersold it.
The security. Yeah, absolutely. No, this is more secure than that. Okay, why? So let's see what we're comparing ourselves against. So there you are, and you got your laptop, and you connect to your domain controller, versus you're on your phone or this device or that device, and you go HTTPS right to a browser, or to a website that then goes talks to the domain controller, okay? Now, on that machine, that web server, you're not setting that up so that people are surfing the net. that web server that you go to, on your laptop, you're off there surfing your net, you're at this news site, that news site, maybe some dodgy sites.
Dodgy sites?
Yeah. You're reading your email and people are saying, oh, you know, click here for something wonderful.
Something, yeah.
And so the risks of, you know, using that same box to manage your domain controller is pretty dodgy. And so that's why the professional sites, they set these things up called jump boxes. What they says, okay, look, take your dodgy device, whatever, and then you go to this machine. Now, this environment is safe. You get to do one thing on this environment, and that is go to these other environments.
And, you know, I think that is such a great description, because a lot of you guys probably have, you might refer to them as bastion boxes.
Bastion servers,
Bastion servers, where that's the whole point, is that my laptop might be the wrong tool to be managing Active Directory with because of all of the weird things on it. But this is a controlled server, a controlled point that I'm going to that isn't going to have all that garbage and viruses and worms and crap on it. And this becomes your bastion point or your bastion server. This is awesome. This is huge time saver anywhere in the world. And this is why, you know, I heard this in from Microsoft. I think it was in the year 2001. We want to get to a place to where we could be anywhere, anytime, on any device, I think was the phrase. And when this feature came out, it was, I can do PowerShell anywhere, anytime, any device, you win. So, awesome feature. Before we wrap up remoting, now we're going to do sessions in a little bit, so.
Okay, but you still, I think there was a key point we didn't nail.
Okay, well.
You got the remoting, man.
What would you like to do? Let's leave this page.
Yeah, okay, so go back to where you did get the event log.
Okay, so you just want the get event log?
Invoke command.
Okay.
Yeah,
invoke
on the three machines. Oh, you're gonna do it all over. Computer name. By the way, computer name, if you want, you can just type CN. But anyway, that's fine. Get event log.
So, yeah, get event log. Log name, let's do system. Notice tab completion is working in the squigglies, guys. Let's do newest three.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, carriage turn. Okay, so here's the question. Why did we return objects? Like that looks like text to me, and that looks like what I wanted. Why didn't you just do that? And the answer is, because it's objects, and objects are awesome. So now what you can do is you can take that and do... go back. Just run it.
All right,
it.
Just run
that.
It. Okay.
I can't remember this. Okay, so now what you can do is you can say pipe to sort... time. See, now here, these aren't sorted by time. So you get three from this guy, and then three from this guy, and then three from those guys. Then say format table.
Format table.
Let's just say time and message.
Property time and message. Need to do time.
It's time written?
Yeah, time written. So let's do time written. Oops, and I need to actually write it in here. You guys get the idea, but let me just get the...
And then maybe it's auto...
This is getting better. And then with the format commands, guys, the format commands are wonderful. You should take a look at them. Format table, one of my favorite ones, because it has auto size.
Is that crazy?
That is totally crazy. So looking at that one-liner... What we're bringing back, and this is great thing, is that we can then continue the pipeline and sort and select and still work with this.
Exactly. That's why the power of objects is so important, because you go do this stuff, it's not about text. It's about giving me the objects. And now all of a sudden, like when I'm over there and I'm doing stuff, I can manipulate the objects there, and that's great. But when I do remoting, what I can do is I can get the objects from a very large set of machines, bring them here and operate against the object. So imagine you say, oh, I got somebody and I need to give them a share. You can go out to all your file servers, get the disk space from all your file servers as a collection of objects, sort it by free space, and then you can say, give me the top three, and then you can look at those and say, yeah, that's the one I want. Imagine how else you do it. You go to this one, find it, write it down. You go to that one, write it down. You go to that one.
How many of you guys are actually still sending people out to do that? Go check that file server, see how much disk space it is, put it into the spreadsheet so we can keep track of this, as opposed to, and there's several ways to do it, what he's talking about, but as opposed to, let's just use, what is it, get volume, right? Is one of the
get
new
disk.
Commands? I think get volume will give you free space and size.
Look. We're going to find out in a minute.
We're going to find out in a minute. Size, oh, size remaining in size.
Ooh, ooh. So, yeah, do it, 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 do it,
do it, do it, do it. So let's do, what do you want to do?
Invoke command.
Command, and we'll do it to the...
Wait, can we show them the short way? This is here's the short way.
Yeah,
ICM.
ICM.
And then the names. No, just CM.
Or just do the names, yeah, because it's positional. So DC, S1, S2.
That's the short way.
And we want to do, get volume.
And pipe it to sort size remaining.
Get volume, sort size. I can't spell anymore. It's been a long day. Sort size remaining. Let's just try that. See what we get. Oh God! Look! The size remaining. Oh,
no, wait! No, here's the thing. Go back up. Scroll up. Okay. Notice how the formatting's. No, I want to show the previous text.
Oh, the previous one. Okay.
So notice here. It just shows you drive letter to size. But now you go scroll down. Notice we have PS computer name.
Yay.
When the objects come back, we add properties to it. And we add where did this thing come from. So that when I do this sort, and then you go down at the bottom, I can see, okay, well, there's my volume, but where did the volume come from? And the answer is S2.
That's right. So, and guys.
Party on, my friends.
Oh, and here's the thing. That commandlet, you can just say, just show me the C drive. You can sort and filter this out more where I just want to see the computer name and the size remaining and just get a nice, short, terse list. Then export to CSV. You got your report done and you did it on as many computers as you wanted to in seconds.
Oh, so, should we show them select last? Yeah, show them that.
Yeah.
So here, this might have been, like if I'd done this to like lots of machines and there were file servers and lots of stuff on it, this would be pretty big and you don't want to mess with that, right? So what you do is you say select minus last. Let's pick the last three.
And what it'll do is give you the last three. Just exactly what you think it would do.
Boom.
There's the last three. So we
PowerShell
can also
rocks.
PowerShell so rocks. We have first, we have last. There's all kinds of ways. This is the importance of taking a look at those help files. Skip, exactly. So make sure you look inside these help files because you can do it. It's not something, well, I can't figure out how to do it. You don't need bizarre long lengths of code. You need to look at the help files. Yep. They've really thought this stuff through.
And if you get stuck, PowerShell.org
and forums. Ask on the forum.
Yeah, lots of really helpful people out there.
And just as a side note, it's fascinating that how strong the PowerShell community
is. It is, yeah.
You guys have noticed that this is not necessarily the easiest tool in the world for you to learn. It's the most powerful one in your toolbox, but it's not an easy tool to learn because you're just staring at a prompt, and now what do I do? We've all gone through this, and so the PowerShell community is so strong, they want to help you. So avail yourself of those resources, and I'll give you some more here in a little bit.
Yeah, can I riff on that a second?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. You know, we found as we were rolling out PowerShell that the community just flourished, and it's like, wow, yeah. And people were having a blast. Now, here's the interesting thing. Turns out that this like hurts the community. No, seriously, it hurts the community. Why? Yeah. And we noticed this because at some point we're putting the things together and everyone was like, hey, did you see what Bruce did? No, what did Bruce do? We all run into Bruce's office and he shows what he does. It's like, oh man, that's awesome. Can you send that to me? He sends it to me and I'm doing it. And then I change it and they're like, oh, Jeff, check out what Jeffrey did. And everybody comes running. And we were just having a blast with this. And we talked about this a little last night. We said, boy, we're really having fun here. And like it used to, computers always used to be fun, and then for some point they stopped being fun. It just seemed like it was a job.
It became mundane.
And I think it was because of this damn thing, the mouse, right? And so here's the idea. Like I never say, hey, come on, guy. Did you check to see the way Jason was clicking that mouse?
Right.
My God, you are such a clever guy. Did you see the snap on that thing?
See, I love you, man, because, man, I work on my mouse moves. And so, yeah.
Well, no, that's the point. So when I see you program, when you script, when you write together this command line, I see how you think, and I'm able to say, wow, that's really clever. That's really neat. And you're able to then I say, oh, can I have that?
Right.
And you give it to me, and all of a sudden, you've helped me. Like, you click, like, say you're a god at clicking that mouse, right? How can you help me? It's
right.
Like, step back and be impressed, I guess. Just
like, nice, well,
you can't help me, right? But with a script, you can help me, and I can take it, and I've modified it, it meets my needs, and I look great to my boss. And now all of a sudden, you know what? Two things. One is you feel good because you helped me. Two, I feel good. I have a debt of gratitude to you. I mean, thank you very much. That's very
right.
Awesome. And you know, buy your beer or something like that. And also I say, hey, you know what? I should help other people too. So really, you should help other people. First, be aware, there's lots of people in the community out there who more than willing to help. You should not be sitting, you know, suffering in silence. No, no, no. If you're confused or anything, I guarantee you, nobody's going to be, you should not be embarrassed by any of your questions. People aren't going to make fun of you. That's not going to happen. The barrier for you asking a question should be extraordinarily low. Just ask the question in a forum, in Twitter, very useful place as well. Just ask that question. People will help you. And it turns out, then you should participate. You should say, hey, I found this clever way to do things. You should blog things. And here's a great thing, right? So you might know, I've been doing this PowerShell thing for a little while now.
Yeah.
I blog things and say, oh, here's what I do. And people will say, geez, why do you do it that way? Why didn't you do it this way? And it's like, I didn't know you could do it that way. And so the community is teaching me how to do things. Honestly, it's just a wonderful thing.
And I have to say, it's truly amazing. And remember when computers were fun, when it wasn't, I need to reset a bunch of passwords, and you just sat there and went
click,
like this.
Click, click,
where
click.
Now you're actually going, oh, I'm going to figure out how to reset these passwords. Or I'm going to figure out how to do X, Y, Z. Awesome. And now I'm going to automate it so I never have to do it again. But it was fun figuring out the problem. It used to be fun solving the problem.
Yeah.
And PowerShell's brought that back. And the community is really strong with that. Folks, so here's what we're going to do is let me show you the, just to let you know, that all of this stuff we did in remoting is in the slides.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
I'm just going to go through these real quick. But it's not the end yet of remoting. We've got some more stuff to do. But we want to start some automation and some scripting to come up. And so we're going to kind of get started on this and before we take a break. So if you have questions or comments, please make sure you're jumping out there. And we're going to come back to remoting in just a second. But before we take a break, let's get started on this concept of automation. And to do that, we need to start to talk about things like security, because we're going to talk about scripting now. And so we're going to take the commands that you're building as one-liners and so forth, and we're going to take those commands and now automate them by putting them into a script and just telling the script to run them for us. No major deal yet. It's pretty straightforward, but to run a script requires some special security. So we're going to talk about security. We're going to talk about variables, a place to store your stuff, maybe a little bit with quotes, and then we'll start getting into the automation. So the first thing off is, and by the way, that's a picture of me right there, the big guy in the, on the next screen. And usually people say that's the picture of me, but that's guys in the back going, yep, that's it. So PowerShell is secured by default for several different ways. Now,
yep.
We had some problems in the past with like VBScript. You double click on it and it runs.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about what PowerShell does for us.
Yeah, so, okay, again, remember, secure by default. You know, we did this, secure. So when you double-click, so what happened if you weren't around then? People came in one morning,
God, yeah.
And they got a mail. I love you.
I love you.
And they're like,
you.
Oh, well, I feel special. I've got a secret admirer.
That's
and
right.
even the people like, I bet that's not true, but it might be.
That's right. So I want to find out
who loves me. click, and then it would run. You click on this thing, and it would run. And guess what? Bad things happen.
Bad things happen.
Anybody who's like giving you something free or promising to grow or shrink your body parts with money just doesn't work. Okay. And so too, somebody sends you love. Don't click on that stuff. Anyway, so with PowerShell, somebody sends you that, and you double click on it. It brings up it in the editor. It doesn't run it.
Doesn't run it.
That is the key.
So let me do a quick demonstration of that. Let's just make a really quick script. And guys, it'll get cooler than this, but I'm going to make a really quick script. And I've been doing this get service bits thing all morning. I'm getting sick and tired of typing this in. And I'm going to make sure that it works. I'm going to take this right now and I'm Copy it, and I'm going to start up Notepad, and I'm going to, yeah, we're using Notepad right now. Don't worry, we're going to get to the ISE. I'm going to paste it in there, file, save as, and here's the magic to making a script. Well, let me put it on my desktop so we can see it. Is, what do you want to call this script?
Let's
call
it,
I love you, I love you, and let's dot PS1. PS1, and I don't actually want to put it on my desktop.
No.
I'm going to put it under my scripts folder here so I can get to it. And wait a minute, there's a scripts folder right there. I love you, PS1.
You got to get rid of the text. All files. Right there.
All files. And save.
Stick with me, guy. I'll help you out.
You're looking at it. So I've got a script. What I want you to see is yes, I'm going to show you this graphically first because I want to see what Jeffrey just said. I'm going to go out here, and if somebody were to send this to me, I love you, PS1, and I'm going to double-click it. See? Brings it up in Notepad or whatever editor you're set for.
It.
The what?
They didn't love
me. They didn't actually love me. It didn't execute my script. Now, this is a good thing for so many reasons, as you guys already know. You don't want scripts to automatically execute, but I want to bring something up. A lot of the security that we're going to be talking about, and the next thing, which is execution policy, which we're going to do before we go on break, I need to tell you that this security is designed to take an unintentional user to stop them from doing unintentionally malicious things. In other words, I want you to think about, I downloaded a script, I double click on it. I didn't want it to run, I wanted to look at it. This helps you. Now, if you are a power user that wants to be malicious, can we change this? Well, yeah, I know how to change the association of the PS1 to make it actually execute. That's just not a good idea,
yeah,
though.
Don't do that.
The point is we're not going to stop you from doing that, but this helps you from making foolish mistakes like this. So let's try to execute this script and watch what happens. There's another security feature, the whole path thing. You make us type in the path.
Yeah, well, first just try and type it.
So C:\scripts, and I love you, PS1.
CD to there. CD
to
that directory.
Oh, okay, you want me CD to it? Okay.
And then just type I love you.
Oh, I love you.
I love you?
No, that's not going to work. IP. Well, I love IP.
But I love IP.
I love IP. IP, therefore I am. There we go. I love you. What?
See? It says no, my friend.
No, not recognized as the name of a commandlet, a function, or a script file. Check the spelling. Well,
but then look at the suggestion. Have you ever noticed that?
Oh, dude.
You ever notice that?
The command I love you was not found, but does exist in the current location.
You never noticed that?
I never noticed that. Tricky, tricky. So now that's just going to confuse me more because it's going to say, but then it actually tells me how to solve it.
Yeah, type dot slash. Now here's the reason why. This is what's called a trolling attack. So what would happen is, and this is an old time Unix problem. You're admin and you CD to somewhere and you say print working directory. And a bad guy would go in that directory and they'd put something called print working directory. They would rename iloveyou.vbs to print working directory. So you CD there, you do print working directory, you run that code. And bad things would happen. And so what we said was, no. If you want to run something in the current directory, you have to be clear that that's what you want to do. We're very clear, very big on intentionality. You have to tell me that that's what you want. Otherwise, no.
I remember rootkits used to come in. There was a DIR rootkit, and you would go DIR, and you were running the rootkit.
So what this
prevents from is, let me show you this two ways. One is, I could try to run the script by typing in the full path to the script, I love you. Or I can be in the current directory, and let me show you that one. If I'm in the current directory with the script and try to run it, it's dot backslash I love you PS1, and that's what that general message at the bottom told you to do because it saw it there. This will run my script. Oh no, I'm a failure. I'm a failure in life because it found it, but it says it can't be loaded because the running of scripts is disabled on this system. For more information, in other words, you're not allowed to run scripts. And when we come back from break, we're going to show you why you're not allowed to run scripts, and then how to change that. So we'll see you guys in 10 minutes, yeah? 10 minutes.
Cheers.